Hey, this is Leo for Actualized.org. And in this episode, I'm going to be talking about uncovering your childhood vows. A tree that is unbending is easily broken. A quote by Lao Tzu. Merry Christmas and happy holidays. I was feeling like I was missing out on the Christmas spirit this year because I've just been like working a lot, meditating a lot, working on stuff to get ready to go spend some time with my family. So just kind of getting prepared for all that. And I didn't really have any time to like go to stores, do shopping or any of that kind of stuff. So I thought I'd put on this hat just to get myself in the mood. You know, it's funny, this hat, I got it last year, like a couple of years ago. I was looking for like the perfect Christmas hat. And I went all around Vegas. I went to like all these costume stores. We have some like amazing all year round costume stores because it's Vegas. People party here. So they sell like Christmas stuff like year round, 365 days of the year. And I was looking for the hat, and like they had just like bad hats that didn't fit my head. I have a pretty big head, if you hadn't noticed. And I just couldn't find a hat that I liked. And I, at the end of the day, I just gave up, you know, looking for the damn hat. And then finally, I just go to a supermarket just to go like buy some food or whatever at the end of the day because I was hungry. And then I'm checking out and I see, oh my God, they have hats right there at the like at the checkout counter. And it was like the perfect hat. And that's what I'm wearing right now. So anyways, I hope you're going to have good holidays. I hope you're keeping your eye on the ball for 2017. And all the opportunities that that brings to you, all the new stuff that you can be doing, how you can be growing yourself and developing your consciousness. But what I have for you today is actually a very practical episode. You know, some people have been whining ever since I shot that sage video, becoming a sage, and put that out there as a vision for you. Some people have been whining, is like, oh, actualize.org is not practical anymore. All these esoteric, mystical topics that I don't want to hear about. Well, look, there's still a ton of practical stuff that I'm going to share with you. I'm excited to share hundreds of practical topics. But also, you got to appreciate that just because something's not practical for you right now doesn't mean that it's not super valuable. The most abstract wisdom and advice is the most powerful. It has the most potential to transform your life. But I understand that you do have to work up to it, right? So we're going to throw you a bone here. For those of you who like practical stuff, here we go. What we're going to talk about here is this concept that I've kind of just come up with for myself that I discovered. I don't know. I'm sure other people have discovered it too. Is called childhood vows. And basically what this idea is referring to is that throughout your childhood, as you were growing up, and I'm defining childhood very loosely here from birth till about 25 years old. So basically your entire young adulthood and teenage years are included. As you were growing up there, a lot of deep attitudes were cemented in your childhood and in your teenage years, and they are locked into your mind and your brain. They're wired in there. And I'm not just talking about the obvious stuff, which is social conditioning. Of course, we know that the human mind gets filled with all sorts of social conditioning, cultural baggage, religious baggage, schooling, and all this kind of stuff. And a lot of those beliefs are negative and harmful and limiting. Okay, we know that. We can discuss that elsewhere, and I think I already have. But I want to talk about something else. Let me point out to you that what you did beyond just getting socially conditioned is that you yourself played a big role in shaping your own attitude, in your own orientation towards various facets and situations in life. And that's what we're going to talk about here. So when I talk about vows, I mean the vows that you made, the decisions that you made. And it will become very clear to you as I keep going what exactly I mean by this. So what I mean is that there were, if you can recall, there were moments in your life which were like forks in the road. And these could have been huge, epic decisions or huge catastrophes and traumas, or they could have actually been, and most of them probably were, just very minor, insignificant situations that happened, and then you probably never thought about them for 10 or 20 years. But nevertheless, there were these forks in the roads. Some of them were very major, some of them were just very minor. But you made decisions, and basically you formed an ideological core based on which fork in the road you chose. Did you choose to go left or right? And largely, you're not aware of these choices that you've made. And so now you take it for granted and you have a certain personality. You have certain emotional buttons and triggers. You have certain ways in which you are ideological. You have certain preferences. You have certain values and principles which you uphold or which you move away from and that you react against. And what I want to show you is that you are paying the cost for this. Still, for these little, sometimes minor, forks in the road decisions that you made, you created vows around these situations, and that now this has kind of rigidified and ossified you, turned it into bone, as it were, and it's made you rather inflexible. And for this, you pay the cost right now in your life. And let me give you some examples of how just this might work. I want to give you a lot of different examples. And here, I want to play a little bit of a trick on you. I came up with a list of examples, both from my personal life, some of them are, and also just random examples that I came up with. Because one of the ways I like to teach, if you haven't noticed yet, is that I shower you with examples, because most teachers actually don't like to give you examples, and then it's very hard to figure out what the hell they're talking about based off the different abstract concepts, it seems like philosophy. So here's a bunch of examples. But the reason I'm playing this trick on you is I'm not going to tell you which of these are from my personal life and which of these are just random that I came up with. Why? Because I keep noticing this problem of people projecting stuff on me. Like I share something that people are like, oh, now all of a sudden I understand Leo's motivations. I understand why he does what he does, or I understand what he said and why he said it, and I understand his ego and I understand his mind and all this. And what I want to make you aware of is that you're projecting a lot and you're assuming a lot. And I understand that. That's fine. I do that with teachers too. But I don't want to give you, I don't want to make your job too easy, right? Because then people get cocky about it and then they write me an email or something. It's like, oh, Leo, I know this about you and I'm very confident that you're this way. And I'm like thinking, no, I'm not. I mean, you seem to think so, but that's not how it really is. Because honestly, through these videos, you know very little about me. So be careful about assuming what you think you know about me and what my motivations are, why I do what I do, and why I say what I say. All right? So here are some examples. And the first one I'll give to you, this is actually true from my life. When I was probably like 5 years old back in Russia with my mom, and we were like in a sort of outdoor bazaar place, and there was a man there standing there eating a croissant or some sort of pastry. And this was like early in the morning, and I was standing there, I was just like a little kid with my mom, and my mom, she made fun and she sort of judged or criticized this man for the way that he chewed his food. So that was the situation, right? That was the event that occurred. And then what did I do? I created a vow around that. And my vow was that I will never chew food in that manner myself. And that was it. That was the end of it. That was the whole vow. Extremely minor thing, right? You would think like, oh, this doesn't have a large bearing on one's life, does it? I mean, our lives had thousands of these kinds of situations. But what I want to point out to you is that I'm not just talking about every situation in your life where you had to make a decision. I'm talking about specifically those situations where you actually made a decision to be a certain way. You made a decision to have a certain attitude towards a certain thing. And there's a lot of variety in this formula, which I want to illustrate by giving you more examples, right? And the importance of this is that you then become ideological about it and you want to stick to that vow, right? And then, of course, you can become self-conscious, you can become guilt-ridden, you can become judgmental of others or yourself and so forth. So I'll talk about more of that when we finish with the example. So here's another example. Here's an event, hypothetical. A kid goes to school. He needs to speak up in front of the class to give a speech or a presentation or something, and he gets humiliated. That's the event. And the vow might be, he might vow that from now on, I'm going to keep my mouth shut when I'm around a large group of people. That might be his vow. Now, he didn't have to make that vow. There were a hundred other possible vows he could have made based on that exact situation, or he could have not made any vows at all. He could have just kind of like brushed it off his shoulder and just said, oh, well, yeah, I got humiliated, so what? And just moved on. And then it wouldn't have been a big deal. But 30 years later, this kid who now grows up and now maybe is working as a manager in some big corporation, he might still be living down this vow that he has to keep his mouth shut when he's around a large group of people. And you better believe that affects how he feels, how he interacts with his coworkers, and so forth. And in fact, it might become such a big problem that he has to go to therapy, spend thousands of dollars to get therapy just to discover that when he was 13 years old in middle school or whatever, that he made this vow. And he might have totally forgotten about it, right? Because it was such a thing, like, yeah, I got humiliated, but it wasn't like some catastrophe or some huge trauma. So it kind of escapes your mind. Let's do another event, another hypothetical. Let's say that someone was cheated on. This was a guy, let's say. A guy was cheated on in college by his sweetheart girlfriend. This was his first girlfriend he got cheated on. Got his heart broken. So then what does he do? He makes this vow. He says, I'm never going to be loyal to another woman. And then that's how he lives, and that's how he interacts with all future women that he gets into relationships with. Do you think that's going to create problems for him in his life? Yeah, you better believe it. You better believe it. And some people might think, well, Leo, yeah, of course, you know, if I got cheated on by my college sweetheart or whatever, then of course I too would have made that vow. No, that's not the case at all. That is not always the universal reaction to when you get cheated on, is to make a vow that you yourself will now cheat on others. There are a dozen other potential vows you could have made, or again, you could have not made a vow at all. It's very important to understand that point. All right, let's consider another hypothetical. Let's say the event is that you're a kid in school and you get chastised by your teacher for being messy. Let's say you're in elementary school. Maybe you have a messy desk, a messy backpack. The teacher sees this, she chastises you for it. And the vow that this kid makes is, from now on, I'm going to be a good little boy or a good little girl. And that's his vow. Can you imagine how that can shape his life? How significant that can be, that one vow? Such a broad, sweeping statement as, I will be a good boy or a good girl from now on. That's a huge thing. And you might say, well, Leo, but what's the problem with that? I mean, here he's saying that, yeah, he's going to be good or she's going to be good. So isn't that a good thing? What's wrong with that? Well, this goes back to the problem of shoulds and moralization, which I've talked about in the past. You should go check out those episodes about my rant against morality and moralizing specifically. Because the problem here is that when you put up this vow of, I will always be the good boy or the good girl, I hope you can see how many problems that can create in business, in relationships, in your interactions with people. For example, you might now avoid confrontation for the rest of your life because you want to be a good boy or a good girl. Or you might guilt yourself any time that you make a mess. You might spill the milk as an adult, and then you feel guilty about it because you made this vow that you're always going to be good. And in your mind, spilling the milk, well, that's just you being messy again. And now you have this neurotic reaction in your life where you need to be hyper vigilant about any kind of messiness. Everything needs to be spot clean and perfect. And then, of course, when you get into a relationship with somebody and they don't have that same kind of vow, now you've got conflict in the relationship because you're this anal neurotic about everything not being messy, but your partner might be a little bit more messy than you are. And then you have conflict and then you break up. And this pattern can continue for decade and decade and decade and decade. See how this works? Here's another hypothetical. Let's say you have a kid who doesn't really know much about life and he's watching some movie. Let's say he's watching Star Wars, and in Star Wars, there's like Darth Vader, and Darth Vader and Luke Skywalker are fighting forces of good and evil. And the kid sees this, you know, the movie is quite emotional. Maybe it stirs up some emotions in him, maybe even makes him cry a little bit, whatever. And then at the end of that movie, he says, you know what? That Darth Vader, he was really evil. I will never be like Darth Vader. I will never join the dark side. And now imagine that this kid will live for 50, 60, 70 years with this vow lodged in his brain of he will never join the dark side. He will never do anything that might resemble the dark side. Now you might say, well, Leo, that's good. That's what we want. We want to teach our kids not to join the dark side. I mean, are you saying that what, he should have done the opposite of that? No, again, you have to be careful here. Here's the problem with moralizations, is that when you feed a kid who isn't very experienced about life this idea that he should never do anything resembling the dark side, on the surface, that sounds great. But also, now he's going to be guilting himself for his whole life, worrying about whether the choice he's going to make in his relationship or in his business or wherever else might resemble something superficial that he saw in a movie. And that he might think like, oh, well, if I say that thing there, if I confront this person here, if I need to have a frank conversation with somebody about some thing, that maybe that's like me joining the dark side, and I don't want that. And then that screws him up, and he needs to go to therapy and pay thousands of dollars and spend years trying to find the source. And the source might be something just as innocent as this. Try to get it? Okay, good. Now, next hypothetical. Let's say you have an uncle, favorite uncle of yours as a kid, and he gets sucked into some sort of religious cult. And then you find out about it through the grapevine in your family. Okay? That's the event. What's the vow? Well, your vow might be, you know what? My uncle got so screwed over by this cult that I vow to defend atheism and rationality. I'm going to be a skeptic. I'm going to become a scientist. I'm going to defend everything that's rational and logical. Now you might say, well, that sounds great. What's wrong with that? But again, every time you make a rigid vow like that, it creates problems. Because now you're going to be a rationalist crusader. That's what you're going to be. And you're not going to have an ability to connect with people who maybe are not cult leaders. And you have no risk of getting sucked into a cult. But as an adult, you're going to be around all sorts of people with different beliefs, different religious traditions and so forth. And now you're going to hold all religions as evil and something to crusade against because of why? Well, because of this one rash judgment you made based on one specific circumstance of your uncle getting sucked into some nasty evil cult. You see? And you overgeneralized. You went too far. Your thinking became black and white. And now actually what happens is that you commit the very same evil that that cult committed with your uncle. Because now you're sort of stuck in a cult of atheism reacting against religion. And if you don't think that atheists do this, oh boy, you haven't seen some of the bloodthirsty atheists and rationalists out there who are more bloodthirsty than many religious people. It can be a scary thing. So watch out. Here's another example for you. Hypothetical. Let's say that you're a kid and maybe you're like 15 years old and maybe you're interested in like starting your own business or something. So you're starting a business. Maybe there's like somebody you want to contact on the internet. Maybe some mentor you look up to and you contact them and you write them an email. And you're like, oh yeah, I want to maybe become a business partner with you. Let's do a joint venture. And here's my idea. Here's my proposal for what I can do for you. I want to work for you. Something like that, right? And then what do you get back? You get back a rejection email that says, no thanks, kid, not interested. Boom. Or maybe even worse than that, you get back silence, nothing at all. And so what you do is you make a vow. You say, this was so painful to me because it hurts you, right? It hurts when you get rejected. So this rejection via email was so painful that I vow to never reject anyone as cold-heartedly as this person rejected me. And you might say, well, that's good. That means the person's now going to grow up to be this nice, compassionate, good human being. Oh, no. Oh, no. No, that's not how it's going to work. How it's really going to work is that this person will now be neurotic and now be putting up a fake front of compassion. So, for example, let's say somebody applies to his, let's say he grows up, now he's like 40 years old, and somebody applies to him now for a job, writes him an email, hey, you know, sir, I would like to work for you, right? Now he reads this email and he thinks back, and this is, happens on a subconscious level, he thinks back to when he was 15 years old and this happened to him. And he's like, well, this person isn't right for my business. Like, he doesn't have the qualifications. I'm reading his email. He's clearly not qualified. He's not a good fit for my company anymore. But I would feel so bad if I rejected him. I wouldn't want to tell him no. So, oh, I think I can give him a try. Let's give him a try. Let's hire him anyways, even though I can't afford to hire him. And even though he's not a right fit, I'll just hire him anyways, because I mean, I'd rather do that than break my vow. I vowed to never reject anybody as harshly as he rejected me, you know, 30 years ago. And so then this leads to all the problems that leads to. See how it works? It's very sneaky, this stuff. It can be very subtle. Here's another example, hypothetical. As a kid, you're in your car and your parents are driving, and then you see a homeless man, a bum on the street corner. And then you ask your dad, like, hey, what's that guy doing there? And he's like, oh, yeah, that's a bum. That's what happens to you when you don't get a good job. And then at that point, you vow to yourself, I will never become like that bum. I must have a good job. Can you see the kind of problem that creates? Now you're going to be neurotically stuck on this notion of having a good job. And that's going to be a pattern throughout the whole rest of your life. That can create all sorts of problems and complications. Here's another hypothetical. Your mom's company, let's say, screwed her over and decided not to cover her medical expenses with insurance when she had some sort of like serious disease. And so this created some strain in your family, right? And there was some anger in your family at the company because they were supposed to pay for it, but they didn't because of some technicality. Okay. And you're a kid. You're just listening to this. You don't really understand the whole situation. And you just see that anger directed towards the company. And then you vow to yourself, I will never work for a corporation ever, because those corporations are evil. Look at what they did to my mom. I will never work for a corporation. And then when you grow up, think of all the problems that will cause you. Think of the kind of resentment and little subtle passive-aggressive attitude you're going to have towards business in general, towards corporations. That's going to create problems for you. And you're not going to be open to the possibility of maybe a corporation who's actually doing good in the world and offering you a position. They might offer you this sweet position, and then what are you going to do? You're going to reject it. You're going to say, no, that corporation's an evil corporation, just like that corporation who screwed over my mom. They're all the same. And why are you saying that? Well, because when you were young, you created this vow. This vow was based on very limited world experience. And so it led to this kind of black and white dichotomy. And now you're using that filter as an adult in a much more complex grayscale world where black and white doesn't apply so well. And that creates problems for you. And finally, I like this example, hypothetical. Let's say your dad was someone in the community where you grew up who had a lot of status and good reputation. Maybe he was a very successful business person or just a very successful community leader in your church or something like that, right? And you were growing up, you were a kid, you were looking up to your dad. And you made a vow because maybe there was some moment where your dad got an award, or maybe he got mentioned in a magazine, a journal, something like that. And, you know, your dad was proud of it. Your mom was proud of it. Your whole family was proud of it. Maybe you went to celebrate it. And then you made a vow and you said, you know what? When I grow up, I'm going to be just like my dad. In fact, I'm going to have more status and more reputation than my dad did. Because when you're a kid, you think very simplistically about the world. And you think like, well, status and reputation sounds like a great thing. What could be wrong with seeking status and reputation? You have no idea about that. All the problems and evils that can happen with seeking status and reputation. You just see the smile on your dad's face and you think, you know what? If my dad is so happy with status and reputation from getting his picture posted in a magazine article, that I'm going to do the same thing. And then as an adult, you could use that to justify any kind of evil shit. Like, you might screw over a bunch of stockholders just to make a good quarterly report, doing some sort of shady, you know, accounting to get a good quarterly report so that then you can get your picture posted in a magazine. So you have the status and the reputation, even though the way that you acquire that status reputation was less than ideal and leads to all sorts of internal conflicts and a breaking of integrity, you see. Or maybe you're just spending the rest of your life chasing status and reputation. Donald Trump. All right, so anyways, you know, you see how this works, right? So what is a vow? The way that I'm defining a vow is as follows. It's a choice that you make about how you will act because the world is a certain way. A choice you make about how you're going to act in the future because the world is perceived by you to be a certain way. You have to understand that this notion that the world is a certain way, there is no such thing. It's always a perspective. It's always an interpretation. It's never the case that the world, that you know the way the world is, and then that then justifies you acting a certain way. Those are all interpretive, highly subjective, highly dependent upon your emotions at a time and your opinions and your ideology. You see? So what's really important here is I want you to actually go back into the past and recall, as well as you can, the moments that shaped your life the most. And sometimes it's not the most catastrophic stuff. Sometimes it's the little stuff that shapes your character and your personality. Now, you should already start to see what the problems are with having strong vows. But let me make it very explicit. The problems are fundamentally that they are mechanical as opposed to conscious. They are inflexible. They tend to be very simplistic and black and white, which does not work well in a nuanced grayscale world, especially the world of adults, especially the world of high-functioning individuals, right? Black and white thinking works when you're doing very simple, mechanical jobs, when you don't have a high ambition, we don't have a life purpose. Mechanical then can sort of work fine, although it still leads to problems. Black and white thinking can sort of get you by. But if you want to be a high-performance individual, you want to be highly successful, you want to be sort of a superstar or a rock star in your career, you want to have a strong life purpose, you want to be a leader, you want to be a visionary, you want to innovate, you want to change the world, black and white thinking is not going to work. It's going to stop you dead in your tracks. It's also founded upon very limited experience, these vows. As an adult, you have a lot more life experience. You understand that as an adult, when you have one of these kind of forks in the roads, you don't make a strong vow the way you did as a kid. I mean, you still can, but not nearly as strong because you have more life experience. As a kid, it's very easy to misinterpret the most innocent of things, right? For example, a kid writes an email to his favorite role model. His role model doesn't respond, but the kid doesn't know that, hey, that, like, if I wrote an email to Barack Obama as my role model as a kid, right? The kid doesn't know that Barack Obama gets like a billion emails a day from everyone, you know, from terrorists that want to kill him to like thousands of school kids. So he can't personally respond to all these emails. It's not possible, right? So the kid gets no response, but he reinterprets that as like, oh, that must mean Barack Obama secretly hates me or he rejected me simply because he doesn't understand that the president of the United States is a very popular guy. He's probably not going to respond to your email. See? So that's the kind of stuff I'm talking about. And what this results in, emotionally speaking, a lot of emotional problems come from this. So a lot of therapy, I think, stems from this very issue I'm talking about, the need for therapy, rather. Because when you start to feel guilty, stressful, when you start moralizing to yourself and to others, you have conflicts with people, you become judgmental. You create all sorts of rationalizations and justifications in your mind for why the world has to be a certain way. This closes you down and it basically just gets you stuck in life because you just kind of like, when you're a kid, you're this like amorphous blob of water. You're very liquid. You can move. You're very flexible. And then as an adult, slowly, you know, that water is like the, you're putting that water into a freezer and it just kind of freezes, congeals, solidifies, and then just like turns into rock solid stone. And then you can't budge it for the rest of your life. And then people from their 20s onward are just like these rocks, these stone golems who don't have the requisite flexibility, the requisite variety or creativity necessary to be highly highly effective, creative individuals who are able to really solve problems and work around complicated, nuanced obstacles. So that's the problem. Now, our goal in this work, self-actualization and consciousness work in general, spirituality, is to have liberation. Liberation from all these rules and strictures. And to use consciousness instead, rather than mechanical rules or mechanical vows or habits. And to be flexible. That's our goal. And to also not be reactive. To not be living our life in reaction against something, you know. If someone hurt you in the past, you have to let that go. You can't live with that shit for the rest of your life. It's going to destroy your life and all the potential that you have. It's not going to do anyone any good. Not to that person, not to yourself. So this is where forgiveness is a good principle to practice, right? Because so many people are just living their current life. Their current life, what it basically is just a collection of reaction responses, knee-jerk reactions, mechanical reactions, habituated over time against all the bad shit that happened to them that now they're trying to avoid. That's how most people live their life. And that's a terrible, terribly unconscious and terribly limited way to live your life. You don't want that. So what's the solution? Simple. It's awareness and understanding. And for this, I got a very practical exercise for you. So here it is. I got an assignment. This is your homework assignment for this episode. You're going to set aside 30 to 60 minutes in silence. You're going to sit down with several sheets of paper or a small notebook, and you're going to try to recall every single decisive moment or situation that occurred to you from your birth up until maybe 25 years old, right? From birth to 25. And you're just going to make a list. You're going to brainstorm them sort of in chronological order as well as you can and just get it all out. And you don't need to write paragraphs, just like short little phrases of like, oh, my teacher chastised me for farting in class. Okay, that was one. And then another one might be, you know, I got rejected by my high school sweetheart. Okay, that's another one. Another one might be, I got an F in math class. Okay, you got an F in math class. And then another one might be, you know, I got rejected from my favorite college. Okay, you write that one down. And, you know, another one might be, you know, I ordered some food and it made me sick. Okay, that's another one. Right? And so just kind of just brainstorm them, spit them all out. You probably have 100 or more of these. Just make a nice long list and keep it short. And don't mention what the vows were yet, because that is where you're going to apply my worksheet. I have a worksheet for you. Click the link down below. Download the worksheet. There's questions that you're going to be applying to this list that you generate. So generate the list first, then apply all these questions. And there's two parts to the worksheet. So do all that, and you will have some amazing insight into why you are who you are, where your personality came from, where a lot of your attitudes and habits came from. And just that awareness alone can start to release you from the bondage that all these vows and rules have been keeping you enslaved under. All right, that's it. I'm signing off. Please click that button for me. Post your comments down below. Share this episode with a friend. Come check out actualize.org. This is my newsletter right here and my website. Come to the forum. Check out the forum. I just released a big, long article that people seem to like about how to become enlightened. It's called Leo's Practical Guide to Enlightenment, so go check that one out. There's other cool resources you can find on the forum. Check out my life purpose course. But basically, just stay tuned here, because hopefully you can see that the information that I'm providing to you here is potentially life transforming. And what's really difficult for me to communicate to people is just how life transforming it will be if you just stay on board with this process. You take action, you do the fucking assignments, you watch every single week, and don't make excuses about it, and just keep going. Keep going. Don't let any obstacles or doubts stop you. This is a very practical matter. If you disagree with things that I say, just keep fucking going. You don't need to accept everything that I say, but you do need to keep going. You do need to keep educating yourself about the potential that you have. That's what I'm going to be focused on for the next year and more as I'm releasing content, as I'm showing you not only the techniques for how to actualize your potential, but even more importantly, which very few people share with you, is your full potential. Very few people, even in the self-help field, who can give you amazing techniques, will actually show you the full scope of your potential as a human being. That's extremely rare. And one of the reasons is because they don't know. Even people teaching you enlightened stuff, they still don't fucking know what your full potential is. See, my passion in life is finding what the full potential is of things. That's sort of my forte. So stick with me, and I guarantee that you will discover things about yourself and about life that will blow your mind. Just absolutely blow your mind. So sign up, stay tuned, and I'll see you soon with more. And of course, happy holidays.